And we continue today with the last part in our series with the attorneys from the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. I would like to welcome back to the program Eric Jantz, who is a staff attorney there. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Nice to have you here. And we've been talking all week about the activities of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, which are inevitably about the activities above and beyond the center, namely what's happening in the state of New Mexico. We've been talking about the alliance between industry and government and the role of the people, which is an ongoing theme and a very important one. You've been working on a number of issues, including the PIT rule, which bears a certain resemblance to the rules involving the dairy and copper industry, which is if you protect the ground, then not as much waste goes into the water supply, which seems to me to be so eminently reasonable that I still cannot really understand why anybody's fighting that. But nevertheless, we've got some other issues that we haven't talked about yet at all. One of them is uranium mining, which you've been working on, and there have been a lot of issues surrounding uranium mining and human health here in New Mexico. What's going on now?
So the uranium industry has a long history in New Mexico, as you know. There are two real issues that surround uranium mining. One is the existing waste that contaminates many communities throughout the northwestern part of the state, as well as proposed new uranium mining. And one of the issues that communities are faced with, and one that our clients, the Multicultural Alliance for a Safe Environment, which is a coalition of uranium-impacted communities from Albuquerque to Flagstaff, one of the issues that they have dealt with is human rights, the human rights violations associated with uranium mining, in particular, problems with what we call affectionately zombie mines.
Zombie mines? What's that?
Yeah, so the uranium market has been in the dumps for many years now. And companies don't like to clean up mines that have been producing in the past but can't sustain production now at a profit because the uranium market is so poor.
And the uranium market is so poor because nobody's building nuclear power plants.
That's precisely exactly correct, yes. As a matter of fact, the U.S. is phasing out more nuclear power plants now, closing down more nuclear power plants than it's starting up. So we're at a net loss here. In any event, these uranium mines aren't producing now because of a depressed market, haven't produced for years, but at the same time aren't cleaning up the waste that exists at those sites. So they're sort of neither dead nor alive. They're neither producing nor cleaning up. So they're zombie mines. And the Mount Taylor mine on the slopes of Mount Taylor is one of those mines.
So that is a place that has been mined. Waste was left. It's not being cleaned up. What is it doing to the environment and the people who live nearby?
At this point, it's just festering. We know that there is groundwater contamination at the Mount Taylor mine. They're currently working to clean that up, who knows how successfully. But, I mean, part of the problem is that it's not entirely clear what the pollution effects are from these mines because state agencies aren't making the companies monitor that. Our suspicion is that there are probably higher than average or higher than background radon levels, and that people who live in the community nearby, San Mateo, are being exposed to radiation.
And radon is naturally occurring. I just figured out recently that I have it in my house at an unhealthy level, but it is exacerbated by uranium mining?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, you're absolutely right that radon is naturally occurring and that people do have radon in their houses sometimes. However, when you have radioactive ore that's taken out of the earth and put in piles on the ground that are subject to wind, rain, snow, erosion, burrowing animals, that certainly exacerbates the problem. So all this stuff that was underground thousands of feet and not a danger to people is now above ground, subject to the elements and potentially dangerous to human health.
And so these zombie mines are sitting there?
They're sitting there, and they are not being remediated. So what happens is the Mining and Minerals Division, of the New Mexico Department of Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources, MNERD. The MMD is responsible for regulating these mines and making them either produce or clean up. So Mining and Minerals Division is supposed to either have them produce or clean up. There is a provision in the New Mexico Mining Act that allows for a mine to go on standby. It's supposed to be a temporary situation. It's supposed to be a temporary kind of status, okay, so that when there are temporary market depressions, because uranium, like any commodity, is a boom and bust cycle type economy. Anytime that there's a temporary short-term market downturn, a company is allowed to put its operations on standby and resume production when the market recovers. In the case of the Mount Taylor mine, that temporary, and we'll put that in quotes, that temporary status has lasted over 20 years now.
I imagine that when laws like that are written, if they don't specify what temporary means, it can be interpreted to mean anything.
Yeah, and there is a limit on how many standby permits a company can get. The Mount Taylor mine is on its last. They've asked to go back on active status. Who knows what that means? I mean, that may be pushing a little dirt around and not actually going into production, because I don't think that they have that the price of uranium at this point can sustain production.
So what happens now? You have a whole bunch of clients who are interested in having clean air, land, and water.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and in fact, they have a human right to that. I mean, there are human rights treaties, like the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, that the U.S. has ratified and is a party to, that guarantees the right to a healthy environment. And not only is the U.S. government responsible for observing that human right, but state governments and local governments are as well. And in this case, the Mining and Minerals Division is essentially ignoring that human right to the folks in these impacted communities have. And as a matter of fact, over the summer, we went to Geneva to testify in front of a U.N. Committee, the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, that found that having unremediated radioactive waste in communities was in fact a human rights violation, and that the U.S. should ensure that things be cleaned up as expediently as possible.
So who's responsible for making sure that that cleanup happens in a case like the ones we're talking about?
Well, ideally, the Mining and Minerals Division should be doing it of its own accord. It's part of their mandate. In this case, I think that the federal government should put some pressure on the state governments to actually implement these human rights obligations that the state has, that the U.S. and New Mexico has.
But they're not doing it.
They're not.
They're not doing it. So do we as citizens, do you as the Environmental Law Center have any leverage with which to push them?
Well, I think that every community has the obligation and I think the responsibility to demand their human rights. These are rights that are inalienable. These are rights that are go beyond the rights that are guaranteed even in the U.S. and New Mexico constitutions. And, you know, they are inviolate. But they can't be implemented correctly unless people demand them. And a lot of times people don't even realize that these rights are guaranteed to them. So education and organization, I think, are really important to making sure that these rights are respected.
Well, there's, on the one hand, not knowing that you have these rights. On the other hand, not knowing whether that pile of stuff over there is giving you or somebody cancer in that community.
Yeah, and I do think that that's a huge issue. There has been a tremendous lack of interest on the part of state government in particular, but the federal government as well, in actually exploring and finding out how groundwater and how human health has been impacted by the uranium mining industry. And I think in some ways it's by design, because I think that if the picture became complete and clear about the impact that uranium mining has had on the state in terms of the costs to public health and water, that we'd never have an operating uranium mine in the state again. People wouldn't tolerate it.
What do we know, and how do we know it?
The emerging picture is becoming increasingly concerning. There are a number of health studies that are being done. The results haven't yet been published. They're slated to be published. But in some conversations with clients and some of the public health professionals, the picture is becoming clear that living in proximity to abandoned uranium mines and remediated uranium mines, those mines that haven't been cleaned up, these zombie mines, that it can lead to a whole host of disease and autoimmune dysfunction. Things like hypertension, heart disease, kidney disease. So, you know, people generally associate living near these radioactive dumps essentially as, you know, the cancer risk, which is still, you know, obviously a risk. But there are all these other much more complicated and much more nuanced problems, health problems that we're seeing being associated with living near these mines.
We're talking to Eric Jantz of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. Another situation that is very important to look at and to try to understand in the state of New Mexico and all over the West is hydraulic fracturing, also known as fracking. And Mora County has become a place where a lot of the questions about the future of fracking are coming into focus. Namely, they passed an ordinance basically banning it. Mm-hmm. What's happening in Mora, and what is your participation in Mora County as the law center?
So in 2013, Mora County passed a community rights ordinance. And essentially what that ordinance does is ban not only fracking within the county, but any oil and gas development that would harm public health or the county's resources. Okay, so almost immediately, a group of plaintiffs filed a lawsuit in federal court. And these plaintiffs include the Independent Petroleum Producers of New Mexico, some of the Yates family ranches, and the Yates, as your listeners probably know, is one of the premier oil and gas families in the state. They have a number of local companies, and an individual plaintiff, a landowner. They're being represented by a right-wing ideological nonprofit, the Mountain States Legal Foundation. This is the operation that gave us James Watt and Gail Norton. And they are saying that the Mora County ordinance is unconstitutional, that it's unconstitutionally taking their property rights. But I think that the real important issue with respect to the Mora County case is not necessarily the lawsuit itself, but what that means for local control of resources. So I think that in my discussions with clients all over the state, people have lost faith in the ability of the state government to look after their health or their resources. Because, you know, as the other folks at the Law Center have talked about earlier this week, there really is no separation between government and industry anymore. It just doesn't exist.
And it's crazy because it's supposed to be the opposite, where the government is supposed to be us and they're supposed to protect us against anybody who might do us harm. And yep. That seems to be, I mean, if the somebody who's might be doing us harm is terrorists, they're all over it. But if
right.
It's people who are going to contaminate or poison our water, it's like they're not there.
Right, right. I mean, it's a real kind of paradoxical thinking and one that where there's a lot of internal illogic and dissonance. But it's the fact nevertheless. And you know, people have picked up on that and have grown increasingly frustrated and unwilling to trust state regulators, and I think rightfully so. At the same time, even with the Obama administration having been in power for 8 years, people don't necessarily trust that the federal government is going to step in and take their interests into consideration either. And so increasingly there's a move toward local control of resources and protection of public health. And in some ways that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's actually a good thing in my view, because that is sort of democracy at its purest. So when these lawsuits are filed, It seems to me that the oil and gas industry isn't really content with its position of essentially world domination. They want to stomp out any remaining embers of true democracy that rears its head.
So the situation there is that there are cases like the one that you're involved with. There's a couple of cases, including the one that you're involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the Mora County ordinance versus the landowners who want to develop the land, who want to frack the land.
Precisely.
So what happens now?
Well, what happens now is we're in the middle of a briefing for summary judgment, and basically that's the lawyer's way of saying that we're doing a sort of briefing that's going to decide the case. And that'll be done in February of next year.
And what's really at issue is who gets to control the county? I mean, what are the legal... I mean, we sort of know some of the moral issues. What are the legal issues?
Well, yeah, I mean, that really is sort of the base, you know. So at bottom, it's a competition between whether the Constitution protects property rights over human rights, or whether it protects human rights and democracy over property rights. I mean, in the case of oil and gas extraction, it can't be done safely. I mean, despite the industry propaganda to the contrary, it just can't be done in a way that's going to protect in any sort of meaningful way human health or water resources. It can't be done. So it remains a policy choice. You know, county should be able to decide, yeah, we would prefer to have the revenue, the jobs, but we'll sacrifice our water and public health, you know, in the process, or not. I mean, you know, you get some of the counties in the Northwest and the Southeast who are very clear that they would prefer to have the oil and gas extraction. And that's, you know, that's fine.
Well, I think another issue is, I mean, if you, like, let's say your property, you have a piece of property, and you say, what I want to do is build a purple replica of the Leaning Tower of Pisa,
yeah,
and I don't care what anybody thinks. Well, it may be unsightly, and there are all sorts of ordinances about that kind of thing in certain
sure.
communities, but it doesn't inherently pollute the land, water, or air.
Right.
What you do with your property when you are extracting whatever the mineral is or whatever you're extracting from the ground is not limited to the borders of your property.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I think that's an important point you make, Mary Charlotte, that there's no right in the Constitution that is unlimited. Governments can restrict rights, and they do all the time. You know, we have restrictions on our speech. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. So property rights are the same way. They're not unlimited. The government restricts property rights all the time, what you can and can't do with your property. I mean, I live in Bernalillo County. I can't have an open cesspool in my yard. There are very strict requirements about what kind of septic systems and water treatment systems that have to go in if you're not on the sewer.
And so is this going to be decided? Will this be a final decision? Is it a federal decision or a state one? Or
this is a federal court, federal district court. So what the county does after this has yet to be decided. We don't even have a briefing finished yet, much less a decision. I think once a decision is rendered, the county will make a decision about where to go.
If the decision is in the county's favor, does that mean no oil and gas development in Mora County?
That would mean that the ordinance would be upheld, yes, and that the ban would be in place. I would expect that the plaintiffs would appeal that, but, you know, I can't speak for them, obviously.
Eric Jantz is a staff attorney with the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. This is the conclusion of our four-part series. It's been just great having you and your fellow attorneys on the air this week. And if anybody didn't hear other parts of this series, they can go to SantaFeRadioCafe.org and look over the last week and just search programs and listen to them, because it is very important work that you are doing. I want to thank you, Eric Jantz, for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
My pleasure.
And the New Mexico Environmental Law Center is on the web at nmenvirolaw.org. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.